Today on the Canadian Tech Podcast, the RCMP may have been reading all your BBMs for the past 6 years. Could Google ditch Java for Swift? And Canadian medical tech takes some big strides forward. That's all next and more on the Canadian Tech Podcast.
Welcome to the Canadian Tech Podcast, episode 67, for Thursday, April the 14th, 2016. My name is Stuart Clark.
And my name is Derek Silva.
Well, Derek, another absolutely jam-packed week in Canadian tech news. Hopefully we have enough time to get through it all, but there's some pretty major big stories, aren't there?
Yeah, like breaking news today about BlackBerry and the RCMP, a whole bunch of another BlackBerry story later, our weekly feature on bashing Rogers, some Canadian health news, some innovation there. So yeah, lots to talk about. We'll see if we can get through it.
Okay. Yeah, okay. So our first thing is breaking news as of this morning. Mm-hmm. You actually found this one, Derek. According to a Vice article, as part of a trial involving mafia families in Montreal, apparently Canadian police have had BlackBerry's pin-to-pin global decryption key for several years now. Derek, why don't you give us the high-level summary?
Yeah, so apparently the RCMP has been able to open up and read anyone's BBNs worldwide over the last 6 years. So while the U.S., the FBI, and the Department of Justice and Apple are fighting over whether or not Apple should be forced to unlock phones or weaken decryption on behalf of the government, meanwhile, in Canada, the RCMP has been able to read BBNs between users for quite some time now, with a single global decryption key that they somehow managed to snag.
You're right. Now, we should point out a couple of things. This is for BlackBerry. This isn't for email. This is for their pin-to-pin service, which is kind of an exclusive.
BBN.
Right. Their exclusive instant messaging system for BlackBerry. You know, a couple of years ago, there was a government memo pointing out to their employees that, they actually call it scrambled, not encrypted. And the big thing is this more applies if you're using BlackBerry's own, their equivalent of their enterprise server. Mm-hmm. If you're a company that you have your own BlackBerry enterprise server, your administrator can change this key.
Right.
But
absolutely should be.
Right. But if you do that, you can't send any pin-to-pin messages to anyone outside of your company. So the actual corporate, the actual non-corporate one, if you just buy a BlackBerry through Rogers, Bell, or whatever, as it turns out, all the devices use the same key. So what happened was, as a result of this investigation on this murder of a mafia kingpin in Montreal, I'm going to avoid using my Godfather accents and all that. They obtain this, and the problem with this is, once they obtain it, it's not just for one device. So it's not like them going to the court saying, we need, this person's BlackBerry's encryption key. Once they had it, it actually applies to every single device. So, of course, the question then is, have they been using this for anything else, or have they just been using it for the scope of the warrant? The actual other thing is, and I'm going to put my tinfoil hat on here, because a lot of this was coming out because the defense wanted to find out exactly how these messages were obtained. And the Crown and the government have been fighting for 2 years not to disclose this. So some of the stuff had to come out in the initial part of the court. But on Wednesday, March the 30th, all seven pled guilty to lesser charges. So because of that, the investigation or the defense's disclosure doesn't have to be revealed from the Crown, which means we don't get to hear much more about this. Now, again, the BlackBerry or the tinfoil hat person in me is going, I wonder if there was a deal there.
Yeah, well, so I'm going to say, given BlackBerry's history of trying to thwart other governments like India's and Pakistan's from intercepting messages and trying to read them, I'm going to say I doubt that they simply handed this over to the RCMP, knowing full well the potential implications if this information got out.
Mm-hmm.
So my thought is that they either figured out how to get it themselves, or they hired a gray hat hacker to get it and paid them handsomely, I'm sure. And then this goes along with the revelation that apparently the RCMP has been using stingrays, which are these fake cell phone towers, sometimes put on drones or actually hung up somewhere, to collect IMSI or IMEI data from lots of innocent cell phone users. And have been doing it for at least the last 12 years based on the fact that an officer named Jocelyn Fortin got training on how to use a Stingray device 12 years ago. So, wow, like, you know, we get a lot of this type of news out of the U.S., which we try to skirt around because we're obviously trying to keep a Canadian focus here, but in everyone's propensity for reporting on all this crazy stuff that American police want to do, apparently it's just been happening all willy-nilly here in Canada without anyone knowing or being none the wiser.
Exactly. I'm just going back through the article from Vice. Vice News did this exclusive, and we'll have it in the show notes, of course. You know, there's a quote here. Company CEO wrote last year that we reject the notion that tech companies should refuse reasonable, lawful access requests. BlackBerry hasn't confirmed or denied where the key came from. So I think this is also a case of this may also be a case of some pretty poor engineering, that if you have one single encryption key, because the problem is, and this is where I've been on the fence with some of the Apple stuff and, you know, stuff like that. For law enforcement, if there is, you know, a reasonable way that you could have, without doing a backdoor, if there's a reasonable way that they could have just one but doesn't compromise everyone else, then, you know, that's a possibility. The problem is we don't have that yet. There's no way to. And this is, like I say, this is even worse, because this is just like, okay, yeah, we don't have a way of individually giving you a single key. So here's the master one. And that's where I have the problem with. So yeah, this will be interesting. I'm sure, like I said, we'll definitely be hearing a little bit more about this, even if it's something that, you know, a lot of people say, yeah, pin to pin is not the most encrypted ever. As I say, there was a government memo back in 2013 where the federal government, public safety, they sent a memo out to all their users saying, you know, it's not the most secure. Don't be assume it can be hacked. So,
in some way, everything could be hacked at some point.
Exactly.
What's funny about that is even the Crown Attorney in one of these cases said, quote, "So right now with my device, if I'm not on the BlackBerry Enterprise server, I'm a dead chicken. That's the reality of it. That's what we don't want the general public to know."
And that's the problem. They didn't let the general public know. Yeah, and that's what angers me a lot.
It's so disheartening.
It is. And you know what? Every time this will eventually get out. So it's like, you know, yeah. So this is going to be a huge hit for BlackBerry, sadly, just for those reasons.
And here you and I have both been saying for the past 6 months since they released the Priv, it looks like a great phone. It's running Android, and they brought all their cool, more secure stuff over to Android. Well, apparently that was a pack of lies, because there are obviously some serious issues BlackBerry is going to have to deal with. I hope they have either already changed the global encryption key recently, or working on it right now, because and then of course working on a system where changing the encryption, the private encryption key for a set of devices on a BES server, or having a unique one for each country or what have you, still lets things like pin to pin, aka BlackBerry Messenger, interoperate, because surely to goodness there has to be a way. It might be difficult, but you have many engineers working at BlackBerry? Please try and sort it out.
And they're going to have to, because more and more, in light of things like this, in light of the iPhone versus the FBI, Apple versus the FBI in the States, and even even the Panama Papers.
Yeah.
People are less trusting of these bigger our governments, the rich and powerful, you know, things like that. So, yeah, you know, if you're a company out there, a tech company, and you're doing stuff like this, you know, you've really got, it's time to sit down and say, okay, where do we stand?
Yeah.
Because you can't have your foot in both sides.
Well, it might just mean resorting to something like Open Whisper's signal protocol, like WhatsApp just did. To encrypt end to end, and apparently they can encrypt audio, video, text. So you know if that's what it means.
Exactly.
Like if it means not using your own stuff. Well, do what's best for everybody instead.
Yep.
I think calls for a roundtable at some point soon to focus.
Yeah,
yeah,
because as I said, I'm all for stopping the bad guys, but not at the expense of throwing everyone else, like throwing the baby out with the bathwater.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the thing. I have friends in law enforcement. I can understand the challenges they have in these technologies now, but we can't let our own freedoms and the stuff we have be sacrificed, because if we do that, you know, we're no better than some of these other countries that are already doing stuff like that. You know, the ones we call these oppressive regimes. So, all right, I'm getting off my soapbox now.
All right.
Okay, we actually touched briefly on the Stingray device questions.
Yes.
Do you want to cover anything else on that as well?
Well, so apparently there's a federal privacy complaint about it now. So it's the common name for this type of device is an IMSI catcher. IMSI being a unique number that actually exists in hardware on your phone.
Yeah, it's like a MAC address for phones.
Yeah, basically, it's not networking related like a MAC address is, but it's a globally unique identifier for every single device, and it mimics cell phone towers and tricks nearby cell phones into connecting, and basically it's like a dragnet. It takes everything it possibly can. And so in recent light of the fact that now that we know that the RCMP is actually using these devices, and apparently has been for quite some time, Open Media, a Vancouver-based nonprofit that advocates for better internet connectivity, better online security, a bunch of things. I get the newsletter. They're very, very passionate, good source for this type of information.
Yep.
They have submitted a complaint to the Office of the Privacy Commissioner of Canada due to confidentiality provisions in... Oh, no, sorry. Wrong quote. These devices might be violating our charter rights. And obviously Open Media probably has a strong case there, depending on a judge's interpretation of the charter.
Yeah, and especially when they've asked various departments, including the RCMP, the OPP, Vancouver City Police Department, they've all refused to whether confirm or deny. So, yeah, the fact that they refuse either way, you know, is probably pretty well indication right there.
Yeah, unfortunately, usually it's, nope, we don't use them. Okay, great, you don't use, like, that's usually the response you want to hear. It might be a lie, but if they do actually openly state they don't, I tend to think more often than not that's actually the truth. When people say, "Oh, I can't confirm,"
because they can get caught later on. And that's exactly it. Exactly. Oh, you mean those Stinger devices?
I thought you meant this. You mean that drone I have flying over your office that sometimes your cell phone connects to, and you're like, "Why don't I have a signal?" Oh, that one.
I thought you were meaning this
meant,
piece
like,
of paper
the fish.
Yeah, exactly.
No,
exactly.
We don't have
See?
Stingrays. Why? What are we going to do? Put them in the Vancouver Aquarium? Like, why would we have stingrays? And how would that help us hack your cell phone?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. That's what I thought you meant. See, if these people hire us, buddy, I don't know.
Yeah, we'd be great
All right.
PR people. But anyway.
Okay. Exactly. All right. Let's move on.
Let's
cloud
move on
storage.
Positive news.
Positive news. I like this idea from our friends at Box, who does cloud storage. They have a neat little product here that lets you choose where you want your storage.
Yeah. So they have partnered up with IBM and therefore SoftLayer and Amazon Web Services to actually let you pick where your data physically is stored, regardless of the fact of that it's in a cloud storage platform like Box. Typically, right. You go to Dropbox, you go to Box, you go to Google Drive, and they're going to put the data wherever they want, right? Whatever the default data center is at the moment,
yep.
Or wherever they have the most space, or maybe whatever's closest to you, if they have a good global footprint. Box's new product, Box Zones, will actually now let you choose where you're going to put that data. And this is noteworthy because IBM SoftLayer already has data centers open in Toronto and Montreal, and Amazon is opening their Montreal data center later this year, or their data center, or Montreal region rather, later this year.
Yep.
And if you really like using cloud storage platforms, specifically you have a Box account, or you are considering moving to Box for some reason, or ditching the one you have now, and this is could be a deciding factor for you, Box is going to be able to help you out real soon.
Yep. Now, the only thing we should note is the first phase only applies for AWS services in Ireland, Germany, Japan, and Singapore. But they are going to obviously after that do that. So, but again, great news for people who want to have their data stored within the country or a particular country where they want to be. So, yeah, this is absolutely great news. And again, Box is a good company. I've used them a couple of times. I'm still more of a Dropbox guy, but again, they have an excellent product.
I love my Box account. You love 50 gigabytes free.
Holy cow!
I think it was because I bought my Galaxy Note 2 a couple of years ago, and that had a deal with Box, and I was like,
"That
sounds
awesome.
Good to me."
50 gigs.
So
I've
still got
that's
50 free gigs. Yeah.
That's awesome.
It is.
Okay,
nice.
If
I eventually choose to pay, I'll be able to say I want my 50 gigs in Montreal or in Toronto.
That's right. That's right. That's awesome. 50 gig. That's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Going back to our poor friends at BlackBerry. They are actually, despite this, well, in spite of...
This is positive news.
Whatever,
it's all...
In addition
well, it's
to this.
All positive. For
yeah,
me,
yeah. They were having a great day until this morning. But anyway,
yes.
They're going to be launching two mid-range Android smartphones this year. You know what? I wonder if the CEO finally listened to you and I. Because I remember us talking about this quite a while ago.
Yeah, we've been saying it basically since launch. Like, this looks like a great device, but I'm not dropping $800 on it. And
yep,
now
exactly.
I won't have to if they survive the rest of the year with their phone
exactly.
division. We know almost nothing about these devices, but they are saying that they are going to release two mid-range devices, Android devices this year. One is supposed to be all screen. The other one will have a keyboard, a physical keyboard. I think that's basically what we know. John Chen, the CEO, did say mentioned a $400 device. He's been hearing a lot of people saying that they're more interested in a $400 device. So maybe that's a foreshadowing of how much this thing will cost. That sounds like it'll be American dollars because his previous price quoted was $700. That's definitely the American price. So that would be great. Certainly that would fill a need that you and I mentioned again like last week. And,
exactly. Again, I don't know why we're not mentioned in the story. We ought to get that corrected. I do notice here, he specifically mentions a lot of enterprise customers have said
correct.
To us. So,
yes.
And that's what they need to be targeted. They need to be looking at these bigger corporations which give the devices to their employees.
Yeah, like hundreds
this is where they're going to make it. Yeah, exactly. So we'll see. And again, we will contact BlackBerry to see if we can get them to correct the press release. Just saying, Derek. Thanks to Derek and Stuart for mentioning that. They were right
in London.
That's right. it's not hard. It's not hard to do exactly. Okay, moving on to the developer world. What's happening in the developer world? Looks like Google Swift, first class languages for Android. Tell me more.
All right. So basically, this is still fairly speculative. But it's kind of based on some rumors and some conjecture and that sort of thing happening in Silicon Valley. But the thought is that Google could rewrite Android using Swift or at the very least treat Swift as a first-class programming language on Android so that there wouldn't be a need for an emulator or any sort of go-between between the Java underneath and Swift on top, so that web developers could actually write all their mobile apps in Swift. And so that would make make it a lot easier, certainly, to write once, publish many times. And you get that right now with React Native and with Cordova and that sort of thing. React Native is great if you're a JavaScript programmer. Cordova is okay if you need a fairly light, essentially web app that's wrapped in a binary. But being able to use Swift, which is open source, it was open source last year by Apple. Apparently, Facebook and Uber are both considering whether to head in that direction. And of course, Facebook are the ones who put together React Native in the first place. This could be really interesting. It wouldn't be easy.
Yeah.
It would take a great deal of time. But big companies,
long-term effects could be good.
Yeah, like Lyft, Pixelmator, and Vimeo have all rebuilt their iOS apps with Swift. There's a ton of support from IBM, who also contributes a ton of code to Linux as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
So it certainly wouldn't be easy. And there's also some discussion here on the Next Web about Kotlin, which is a programming language for Java virtual machines and Android. Mm-hmm. Apparently, it's just not quite there, even though it's at version 1.0. Some really interesting discussion here. A lot of implications, of course. Android N is slated to be released later this year. So it's certainly not going to make it for this year, but maybe 2017, maybe 2018, if they decided to make it happen. But it would require a great deal of resources.
It's very much worth going through the link we're going to have for this from the Next Web. Comprehensive, answers a lot of questions.
Yeah, we can't do it all justice here. It's a long article. The TLDR version is, could Google do this? Yes. Would it be smart for them to do this? Yes. Are they going to do it?
Right.
We don't know. And would it be done anytime soon? I'd say probably 2 years.
Right. Okay.
So then
we'd
be on
Android. So we're going to...
N-O-P. Android P. Android peanut butter?
Right.
We'll see.
P. What else begins with P that is a dessert?
Popcorn.
Pecan pie.
Oh, I'm good.
Or peach pie.
I'll take peach pie. Please.
All right. Either one works. But I bet you it's just going to be pie because I like pie. It's the kind of geeky thing they would do.
Raspberry pie and apple pie.
Apple pie, pecan pie, peach. Now I'm getting hungry. I'm going to have to go for pie after this. Great.
Okay.
All right. Moving on. A couple of medical stories here. Our first one is the Globe and Mail calls it an Instagram for doctors, but it's called Figure One. Mm-hmm. And it's a service that's added a messaging tool. I more call it like a Spiceworks, which is an IT platform for IT and network admins to get together. But this is more of an online mobile tool. Medical professionals practitioners around the world, can share pictures of patients' conditions, seek the opinion of others. Kind of a closed infrastructure. The company estimates 2/3 of North American medical students now use the apps. Doctors Without Borders uses it. Toronto Women's College Hospital uses it. They want to be the operating system of healthcare, and it's made in Canada. They've raised about $11 million so far in BC. It's quite interesting.
Yeah, it's like getting a virtual consult. You take a pic. It's what everybody wants to do now with their doctor. I'm going to take a picture of this rash. You tell me what it is, and we're getting there actually, and we'll talk about that in the next story. But this is a really good way for doctors who are stumped, or for medical students who are stumped and want a little bit of help to get essentially a virtual consult, certainly Instagram style, where you post it up and hopefully somebody sees it and says, oh, I've seen that before. It's rare, and that's probably why you don't know, and blah, 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 blah. Here's my explanation. So, that's great. It's nice to see Like, obviously, you see doctors work together in hospitals, but if you're waiting on Dr. X to, you know, get in for their shift because they just worked a 24-hour shift or something like that, that could be a really long time for a patient to wait, if it's a serious situation. So if you can get an answer much quicker, because on the West Coast, it's still prime time, and, you know somebody over there that can help out. There, picture, and it's obviously meant to be a secure platform. They actually just released a secure messaging tool on the app, so to let users communicate directly with one another instead of Instagram style, just posting a picture and hoping somebody responds. So
exactly,
it's good.
Awesome. Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break for a message from our sponsor, and then we're going to come right back with part two of Canadian Tech Podcast.
The Canadian Tech Podcast was brought to you by CleverHost. CleverHost was founded on the idea that web hosting should be available to everyone for almost anything they can dream up at a very affordable cost. By providing customers with an award-winning control panel, a great account management system, and almost every tool imaginable to build great websites, we strive to provide each customer with a web hosting experience they can rave about. Visit cleverhost.ca today and use promo code CTP10 to get 10% off your first invoice.
All right. Thank you to our sponsor. We always love our sponsors, and we thank them for their support of the Canadian Tech Podcast. So, Derek, you were alluding to our next story. This is also a medical story, kind of on a similar vein.
Yeah. So for the people out there who don't want to leave home, essentially, and want to communicate with a doctor over text or a video call, there is finally a solution for you, and it's actually Canadian. It's here first, which is obviously very rare. Akira.md, like medical doctor, is a new service where you can actually connect with a Canadian doctor between 9 to 5 and actually have either a text chat or you can schedule a video call. And they also offer medication delivery, so you can get free same-day delivery to your house or your office. And any data that you compile with the doctors on the platform, you can also see that in the app, and it stays within the app. So that's something you could take to your doctor. Be like, well, I couldn't go see. Sometimes I can't, depending on the severity of what I'm experiencing, I can't see my family doctor for a week or two. So it would be nice to have an option where I don't have to go to a walk-in clinic but I can still talk to somebody fairly soon. So yeah, I mean, it's, the app is really, really nice. It's available for Android and iOS. The doctor will do their best to diagnose and help you treat a lot of common medical issues. They can write prescriptions for you. They can send them to the pharmacy of your choice. They can also refer you to specialists or other health professionals that can help you with a specific problem. Amazingly, they can also order tests for you and send them to a lab near you. So if you need to go to, like, for example, London X-Ray Associates, you're not waiting for... You don't have to wait to go talk to your family doctor and then get the test ordered. You can do everything here. Now, I will say there is certainly value to having a family doctor who sees you on a regular basis and has a more complete picture of your health. But if you're in a pinch, if you're agoraphobic, if you just so can't leave the house, or, you know, I don't know, you're vacationing, right? And you're certainly not going to see your doctor if you're spending the night in Toronto, but your doctor is in Vancouver. Well, this is a great alternative.
There you go.
Yeah,
exactly. Now, we should note there's a couple of things here. They're all staff board certified Canadian doctors.
Yes.
Currently, they're all at their Toronto office. It's not currently covered by OHIP because OHIP being so ancient, sorry, this is my bias coming out there, does not reimburse doctors for videos or texts. Purchases a monthly subscription, be canceled anytime, or provided by your employer as an extended health benefit. So all you smart employers out there, you know, you might want to think about this. Yeah. No, again, pretty it's pretty good. It's something we definitely need to see. So that's going to be awesome. That's excellent.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to push the envelope a little bit before the government's like, oh, okay, yeah, we can cover that.
Yeah, exactly. So, no, to me that makes a lot of sense. I can see a lot of employers, or at least smart employers, getting on board here.
Yeah. And I did get a beta invite, and I used my employer's, my office email to make sure I got one sooner, because I thought, if they see a company email address, they'll probably give me one sooner. The next day, I had a beta invite. So yeah, if you want to check it out, especially if you don't have a family doctor, I guess that would be a really good reason to check this out. Or you're going to travel soon, go to Akira, AKIRA.ND. And hopefully you get a beta invite fairly quickly.
There you go. Okay, moving on to what seems to be our weekly Rogers bashing.
But it's so much fun.
It is. And it's not like we do it on purpose. They enable us. That's what we're going to say. They just enable us. God bless Rogers. Oh, man.
So if you're one of those people who are really crafty and know that, you know, if you threaten to leave Rogers or Bell or TELUS, that they'll give you a good deal, you might have been the beneficiary of the Digital Light package, which had more than 80 TV channels and only cost most consumers $19 a month.
Holy cow.
Yeah. And this is actually one I didn't know about, but I didn't want to pay for cable anyway, because that's still more than twice as much as what I pay for Netflix.
Right.
That package is gone. Why? Because of Rogers canceled it because the CRTC forced them to offer the $25 skinny package, which actually ends up being over $30 once you factor everything in.
But wait, that would mean Rogers wouldn't want to keep their customers happy and only want to think about pure profit. Oh wait,
you don't say.
Sorry. Okay, sorry. I'm back. I'm back.
Yeah, so I mean, it's a major bummer. Apparently, all the employees, when they found out, were quite upset that they couldn't offer this anymore for people who were looking to cancel, because it was like their last ditch effort to keep people paying for cable. And I can imagine it worked for thousands and thousands of people, including a gentleman here from Owen Sound who's featured on the CBC article. And on March 1st or April 30th. Rogers went, okay, that really good $19 plan that we didn't tell a lot of people about, but you guys could use to keep customers on board, that's gone. Now you can offer them the $25 pack, and they still need to pay for a TV box, a standard def TV box rental, which actually puts them over $30 a month. And so no matter what, you know, and if you move or if you change your plan temporarily and want to go back to the Digital Light, I'm sure everybody knows, you can't go back. It's gone now. So, it's a shame.
Exactly.
It really is a shame.
But you know what? You know what? One good thing for Rogers, just like we covered last week, they're going to get less complaints again.
No, I think they're going to get more complaints. Be like, I heard about this $19 plan. What happened? Yeah.
I know. You know what? I was reading some of the, even though I shouldn't, I was reading some of the comments on the CBC story. And again, this is, the cable companies need to remember this, the media companies, and I'm just going to read it. I'm 29 years old. I've been living on my own for the last 10 years. In all this time, I have not once paid for cables. I use internet services, including streaming and Netflix exclusively. Why in the world would I want to pay for cable, let alone watch it after 10 years of advertisement-free media? The answer is I do not and will not ever pay or watch cable television ever. This is my bottom line, and I'm sure tens of thousands of other Canadians are out there who are just like me, and it's so true. They've got to come up with something. I wouldn't want to be in their shoes, but it's that train's a coming.
It sure is. Yeah, and it's going to hit them pretty hard pretty soon. It already has, and it's just going to keep coming. It's not done.
Yeah. Okay, moving on to Ting Internet, looking for a few good mayors. Now, anytime I hear the word Ting, this is probably this, I know this is before your time, but the London Free Press years ago had a cartoonist named Tingley, and everyone knew him as Ting. So anyone who's of a certain age in London, when they heard the word Ting, they think that. But
I have
sadly
heard of said cartoonist.
Okay.
I think they put together a book of his or her cartoons a little while ago.
Yep.
Yeah. So yep. Now I know who you're talking about, but stop making yourself so old.
I know, but you know what? It's fine. It's good. You know what? And the cartoonist was still around. We had they had a big thing in town last year,
right,
as part of a art thing. And he came to the thing and he's around and kicking. And I finally got a chance to meet him. So that was pretty cool. But this is Ting Internet, and this is awesome for small towns.
Yeah. So there's a Canadian company called Two Cows. They've been around for a very long time. Internet age-wise, and so they run hover.com, which is a domain registrar. They run OpenSRS, which is a domain reseller. So if you want to sell domains, you can hook up with OpenSRS, and they handle all the back end, and you just plug into their API and all the rest. And then I think about 2 years ago, Two Cows decided to become a mobile virtual network operator, MVNO, in the U.S., kind of what Google Project Fi does now, and offer really inexpensive cell phone plans, heavy on data, and across a few different networks so that no matter where you were, you had connectivity. Apparently, they've done so well in the U.S., they are actually hooking up with small U.S. towns, usually somewhere between Woodstock and London size, so like 30,000 to 300,000, a little bit too small for Google Fiber to go after first, but certainly big enough that obviously everybody requires internet access now. They're actually making deals with these smaller U.S. Towns and cities to build gigabit fiber optic networks and get fiber to the home, Google Fiber style, to everybody in these smaller municipalities. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, they would love to do the exact same thing here, but for one reason or another, usually a lack of will at the township or the municipal council, that would be the easiest way to put that, they haven't seen any success, or they haven't seen anyone who's like, yes, please, Ting, let's make a deal, let's do this here. I will say they might have an easier time of that if the SWIFT network that's supposed to cover or build fiber optic nodes across southwestern Ontario from like Windsor all the way up to Owen Sound and everywhere in between. The whole idea there is just a network to actually cover the geographical area, but the last mile is still going to have to be built by someone else. So a company like Ting, Rogers and Bell, and or even Star Communications here in town and ExecuLink, they don't want to play. Ting might in that case. But you know, it's really frustrating to know that there are companies who are willing to drop the cash and make this happen here in Canada, and it's the politicians who are like, meh, nobody really wants this, or like, we don't want to invest the money. I'm like, you guys are crazy. Like, this is exactly where you need to be spending your money right now.
I know. My mom, who lives just west of Kavoka, they're supposed to be having internet in, and again, they've got a service and everything, but of course it's Bell stalling things for that last mile. Exactly.
Bell or Rogers? I thought it was Rogers.
This one's Bell. They've got a company out of Brantford that's willing to do it, but then there's some brouhaha. It was supposed to be in January, and apparently Bell is being the roadblock. So, fun. Moving on to our local stories. We actually have two of them this week, Derek, and I'm going to let you start with the first one from a West End high school with a robotics team.
Yeah, well, so the high school, had a high school sponsored team. Unfortunately, teacher retired. Nobody else knew or like could take up the helm. So anyway, this is about the Oak Ridge High School, like you said, out on the West End on Oxford Street near Hyde Park Road. So last year they had a really good robotics team going, but the teacher who was heading it up retired. Like I just said, no one else internally within the school seemed willing or able to take up the mantle and keep it running. Apparently insurance was also an issue, and of course teacher availability. So instead, a woman named, I just lost her first name. Julie Steele.
There you go. I know, and I just found it at the same time, yeah.
Yeah, and her husband, John Kirshner. Kudos to you folks. They decided that with some elbow grease, they could do it themselves. And so they're their children. They have a son and a daughter. They're both on the same on the team, and they decided to turn their basement into a workshop and kept the team together. And not only is this a feel-good story because parents decided to get involved and keep things going, the Oakbotics, the number 3739 Oakbotics team, also went off to the first Robotics Canada Waterloo competition, and they took home the FCA Foundation Team Spirit Award for this very story, keeping things together. And they have a really cool looking robot called Fido, which means forever in design overhaul. Which, if you're any kind of engineer,
that's good. I like that.
If you're any kind of engineer at all, I'm sure you can sympathize and also giggle along.
Yes.
It's been great. The Rotary Club has gotten involved and is sponsoring them. Presidium Equipment, not a company I'm familiar with, but they are also sponsoring the team as well. So if you're a business owner or someone with a little extra money looking to put it towards something, please go reach out to the Oakbotics Robotics team and lend your support, because it's fantastic that they've been able to take this outside the school, keep it going. Big kudos to Julie Steele and John Kirshner for stepping up and doing what needed to be done. Very cool.
Yep, exactly. Well, and again, another fantastic example of the community getting involved. Support your local community, support your local high school.
Yeah.
Because you never know where the next great engineer will come from.
Yeah.
Exactly stuff like this, and this is the importance we talk about STEM. Science, technology, math, and all that, engineering and math. For stuff like this, this is why it's so important. Okay, moving on. The Stratford Festival is very famous, but I know a lot of high school kids. My next door neighbor, I remember hearing the moans every time she had an English class saying, "I got to read Shakespeare." Similar. I don't quite have the earth-shattering, my world is ending tone there. But, that's pretty well was about it. I was weird. I like Shakespeare, so
I did
I'm
as
a geek,
well.
So there you go.
Yeah.
Yep. But this is a great idea. This is created by the festival's education department in collaboration with D2L Corporation, Performance Plus. It's primarily designed for students and teachers, but it's also available for public use of the website. And it's great. They've actually launched, and you can actually watch a performance of HD performance of King Lear for free if you want full screen. And they've got all sorts of things that as it plays, if you have it in a window, they basically go through the text beside and they have explanations. You can stop the play at any time.
Oh, cool.
Kind of get some additional information about something. It's actually really good. I was really impressed. Now, again, I like it because I can watch a free performance of King Lear, but it was really neat to see, some of the things for students. They talk about some of the themes involved, and there's actually some tips and for students to help to understand this. So, I can definitely see where this would have been, this would be useful for people, especially people who have trouble with it. Scene selection, character description, plot outlines, scene by scene.
Some lesson plans for teachers, which is cool.
Yep, lesson plans. And it was, like I said, I watched a little bit of it before we started again. And I was actually pretty impressed. So I bookmarked it so I can watch the rest of the rest of the play.
Nice. And the lesson plan specifically, they even tell you like when to do them. So there's two that you there's a lesson plan and a handout before Act Two, and there's five different things, two lesson plans, three handouts after Act Five. So obviously some key moments in the play, and obviously some key things happen in those acts.
King Lear, it's not my absolute favorite. I'm still a big fan of Henry V, but King Lear is certainly up there on my Shakespeare thing. So
I prefer
the 14th. Oh dear.
I'm just
all right. Well, I know. We're not even gonna acknowledge that. We're just gonna move on. stuff we like. Okay, Derek, this is where you can redeem yourself.
Okay, so I am gonna redeem myself. I am going to bring into the fold in case you haven't noticed, I'm going really DIY maker lately. A piece of software called OpenHAB. We see a lot of proprietary and a variety of vendors doing a whole bunch of smart home, automated home type things. Cree has Bluetooth, I think, connected light bulbs. The Philips Hue light bulbs, of course, are very well known. Nest kicked this off really in a big way a few years ago with their thermostat. Dropcam even with their connected webcams, essentially. Mm-hmm. All that sort of Ring video doorbell, et cetera, et cetera. So the problem with a lot of those is that they use different wireless protocols, even mm-hmm. if they're on the same frequencies as what you're using for your cordless phones at home or your wireless network. And unless you go out and buy a proprietary hub like the one from SmartThings or from Wink, we're still at a really nascent stage here, and so there's no real good way to make everything talk together, or for people like you and I to really enforce the level of control that we'd want to,
yes,
without waiting for arbitrary software updates from the vendor.
And can I also add, also, if the vendor decides that they don't want to support their product anymore, such as what's happening with Revolve,
yeah,
where they're shutting down the things, then yeah, you're kind of SOL with basically a brick.
Yeah, and that's, well, nobody's happy about that sort of that situation.
No.
So OpenHAV basically gives you the capability of building your own hub at home. And it has all of the software necessary to connect most of the devices out there across most of the vendors, the automated home, mm-hmm. smart home vendors. Not all, and that's okay. It's the project itself is only maybe 3 or 4 years old. It'll run on a Raspberry Pi, which is my new love child. And
I won't tell your wife. It's okay.
Yeah, well, she doesn't listen to the podcast anyway. And it'll run on Linux, Mac, Windows, etc. It's completely cross-platform. There is an Android app. There is an iOS app. There is a responsive web version of the admin interface in case you're rocking a BlackBerry with BlackBerry OS or something like that.
And you want the RCMP to know when you turn your lights off and on.
Yeah,
sorry.
Clearly. So I just go, maybe I can BBM to the OpenHAV.
Anyway, we are so getting sued.
Yeah, so now, this is not for the faint of heart. The rules and scripts interface is, these things are written in a Java-like format. So this is not,
okay,
pick this up and like replace my Samsung SmartThings hub. Not that easy.
Right.
But for the person who is tired of proprietary solutions, wants to at least play around with something like this, this is a great way to do that because you can actually connect the majority of your devices, and they do have a list of vendors and devices that they work with, so there should not be any guessing. But of course, if you're the type of person who can actually reverse engineer that sort of thing, you can come, yep, into a huge community and participate in a big way and really open up the platform even further. So
yep,
yeah,
I like
OpenHAV,
this. Open standards.
Yeah, open standards are great. So that's openhav.org, openhav.org. Check it out if you're into that sort of thing.
Okay, awesome. Well, I was having trouble thinking of something again this week. It's been a very busy week. But then I noticed WordPress came out with their next new major update, 4.5, named Coleman. And the one thing I do like about this is it has a feature now where you can actually look at your site live responsive, and in you can preview mobile, tablets, and desktop screens directly in the customizer. So I don't have to edit a page, then go to my phone, reload the page,
yep,
check on my iPad.
Your browser window.
Yep, exactly. I know there'll be a lot of QA people that'll be pretty pleased about this.
Yeah.
But we should also point out, as with any update, and I was updating all my sites last night, as if anything, like anytime you do an update like this, make sure you back up your sites. Because, Derek, you were pointing out there was one particular major theme that this actually broke, right?
Yeah, so via CleverHost, I had a customer of mine freaking out because he builds websites. His company builds websites for dozens of clients, and they frequently use a WordPress theme available on ThemeForest called Salient. Salient bundles in, this is a little complicated, Salient bundles in a plugin called Visual Composer. It's available standalone as well, but in this case, Salient bundles it in because they absolutely want you to use it, and that's part of the point of Salient, is that it's very easy to build pages, yep, like custom pages, without relying on a theme template. So that's fine. That's cool. You see that fairly often these days. However, if you're a smart person and you have WordPress auto-updating, or heck, if you're on a recent version of WordPress that's auto-updating anyway, the update to WordPress 4.5 without a newer version of Visual Composer completely broke the front end of your website. One particular issue I was seeing yesterday was that the only thing that would load up was the customer's logo, a big version of their logo. And that was it. And you could view source. Everything was there. So it was the weirdest WordPress-related problem I had ever seen.
Right.
Makes sense once I found out the root cause. Absolutely makes sense. And I knew it had to do with the theme itself and something going on with the theme, because I could preview the site in other themes, in 2015 and the 2016, the past default themes. And so that worked. Now, the Visual Composer code, I could see it instead of it actually being rendered, which I was like, okay,
it
really has something to do with the Salient theme. I didn't know what yet. And then, you know, so quick Googling, and you find their support page on ThemeForest, and you realize, oh, over the last 10 hours, lots of people have been complaining about this issue. and thankfully, the developers did say, yep, this has to do with Visual Composer. By the time I found out the root cause, they already had a fix on the way. And it was out before the standard business day in the Eastern time zone here was done.
Kudos
to them for working on it and getting it out, and to ThemeForest for, I imagine, accelerating the review process a little bit. They kind of have an app store
process
type thing. And, but it's... So not only should you back up your site, but in a lot of these cases where there's an actual minor version revision, so 4.4 to 4.5, back up your plug or update your plugins first, if you can.
Yep.
And then...
Or even maybe wait 24 hours.
Well, but the big thing with WordPress is that ever since version 4.1, I think, they're all on auto.
You have the option of auto update. Yeah, I know, exactly.
Auto update's on. So you might not be able to prevent it. But, I mean, it's software you're using. You need to be in the know anyway. That's probably a one-off. I mean, the fact that like 100,000 people and their websites were all potentially affected for almost 24 hours does not happen often.
Very rarely.
Yeah, my customer was asking me, like, can we just go back to an older version of WordPress? I'm like, well, hang on, let me check. And sure enough, WordPress had updated the database version as well. So I said, nope, I can't just overwrite this. That's going to probably make this even worse. Just before they had decided to actually, like, restore from a backup, which they had several, the update got released, and they applied it, and everything was hunky-dory again.
There you go. Perfect. Yeah. But anyway, I do like that particular feature of Coleman. So I've been updating mine, knock on wood, nothing so far, but I don't have too many fancy schmancy themes.
Yeah, I get the big thing right now is if you have some sort of page builder plugin, Visual Composer, Page Kit, that sort of thing, update the plugin first, if you can.
First, exactly.
Go in there now, go to the updates screen, do the plugins first, and then you can do your themes, and then do WordPress. Do WordPress last, because you're not going to hurt yourself getting support for stuff that doesn't exist. It's the other way around. When there's no code for the stuff that does exist, that's when you run into problems.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, like I said, as we've been going through today, that's what I tend to do anyway. I do tend to do all the plugins first, and then I do the themes, you know. And then if it all fails, I call you because, you know, great customer service. Exactly. Yeah. We were just talking about
it. One other thing I would like to – sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I was going to
– Yeah, I know you were complimenting me. Sorry. The last thing I want to do is interrupt a compliment. I was just going to say one other cool, really cool feature is the smart image resizing, which has existed for quite some time. Upload a big image and WordPress will automatically make smaller versions that take up less space and that are more appropriate for use on the front, on the website. Apparently, they can now resize the images 50% faster with no noticeable quality loss. That's great. So that'll be good for server administrators like me who are like, oh boy, you know, you just uploaded like 50 images. That's going to take a little while. But so anything they can do to lessen the server load is nice too.
Exactly. Not that I've ever done that. No, really.
No, or
now he's going to go. Now he's going to go check my account, folks.
No, I'm not even going to touch it. No, that's fine.
Yeah.
Servers run fine. Everything's okay.
Yeah, everything runs well. It's all good. And besides the one I'm probably putting the most load on is our podcast one. So there you go.
Probably 50 megabytes later or 35 megabytes later, usually.
Exactly.
Okay. So, all right. I think that about does it.
That about does it. Another awesome show. We have some exciting things coming up in the next couple of weeks. We're going to be announcing about this show. So I think that's about it. Spring's finally here. I didn't make a weather-related comment at all until now. So that's because it's so nice. I've got nothing to complain about.
Yeah, ditto.
None of my cranky old man stuff. So for episode 67 of the Canadian Tech Podcast for Thursday, April the 14th, 2016, my name is Stuart Clark.
And my name is Derek Silva.
Thank you and be well.